Good morning, and thank you for tuning in and being here with us this morning at 88.5 KRFY for the morning show with Chris and Susie. Good morning, Chris Bessler, my co-host.
Hi there, Susie. How are you this morning?
I'm good. You made it.
Yeah, I dashed over here. You just walked in the door.
How was it out there walking that far?
It's chilly.
Yeah.
Icy. Be careful if you're driving or walking.
Oh, it's icy.
Yeah. Okay.
I know it's supposed to be a whole lot colder than it was and a lot more wind. So take a break right now because it's going to get worse coming up. But again, this is the morning show. And what do we have planned for our morning show listeners this Wednesday, February 6th?
Today, we have a talk with our mayor, Shelby Ronstadt, and city administrator, Jennifer Stapleton. And it's a state of the city talk, basically. And of course, last night we had the State of the Union with President Trump. So this is our local version of that here, although it's not a straight-on address because we did throw in a few questions.
And you did this interview previously, and so this is your interview with him.
Yes, and actually we taped the interview on Thursday, so you folks are going to be hearing a taped interview. It's going to sound just like live, though.
Like we're here in the studios with them, but they're off somewhere relaxing, hopefully. Oh, speaking of the State of the Union and the Capitol in Washington, we were able to play that here and stream it from Mitch Jezerich and Pacifica, our affiliate, last night. So if you were tuned in to KRFY to hear the local show or something like that, you heard the... And we also had the rebuttal by Stacey Abrams.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was great. I actually did tune in for a bit on KRFY to hear part of that.
Oh, good for you. And so here we are this morning. And we'll have that recorded interview in just a minute, but what else should we have?
Well, should we have the weather? You mentioned that things are going to actually get colder.
Yeah, let me give you an
example. How can that be?
I don't know. Well, we're not Wisconsin. Remember last week, Minnesota, Wisconsin was 55 wind chill below zero.
Below zero,
wind chill.
Super cold.
We're doing probably a little better than that, but today, right now, it's 19 degrees. Today, we'll have decreasing clouds, so that sun will come out. Keep your sunglasses with you. Mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming sunny with a high near 22. Light winds, 5 to 11 miles per hour. A little better than the big winds we had a few days ago. Tonight, patchy freezing fog. Partly cloudy with a low around 7. Light northwest winds. Thursday, high of 21. A little bit of sunshine. Winds pretty calm. But I'm going to go a little further up. Friday night, again, a low of 8, but Saturday night, a low of 2. So just keep all that in mind. About Friday, we have an 80% chance of snow, and they're not saying how much that will be, 1 to 2 inches possible.
Yeah, so not a lot.
Yeah, just winter time.
Yeah, some other things going on outside. The sunrise this morning is at 7:09 a.m. It'll set around 4:52 p.m. tonight. And over the course of the past week, with the days getting longer, we've gained 20 minutes of daylight per day, and you can really start noticing it now.
I'm cheering all the time about that, because that really helps, you know, not to be driving down here on a Wednesday morning in the pitch black.
Pitch dark, and it's just semi-dark at this point in time. Also, I mentioned if we do get clear skies, check out, it's a little bit after sunset, Mars is popping up again, and it's kind of bright orange. And it's about halfway up the southwestern sky. So that's an interesting thing to see up in our night skies, which are really, when we have clear skies, we really get some beautiful starry nights out there.
Sounds good.
And what else is going on around town, Susie?
Well, a lot of things are going on. One of the things is the Idaho Poor Authority, every Wednesday night, as far as I know, has a fundraiser for a nonprofit. And this tonight, it will be the Strikers fundraiser. So... just so you know what's going on over there.
So you could have a beer and support a worthy cause.
And tomorrow night, something special is going on at Matchwood Brewing, the Sandpoint Reader Appreciation Party. Yeah. While they're having the Birds of Play, will be playing music, and it is hosted by the Reader Appreciation Party people.
Yeah, so that's a way to... it's actually the reader appreciating its readers and supporters and advertisers, so... you can go buy. I think there's going to be food and drink if you're a somebody that likes the reader, supports the reader, you can go to that. I wanted to mention also that something pretty interesting is coming up Thursday through Saturday. The 2019 Oscar-nominated shorts are going to be showing at the Panada Theater. And, of course, if you ever sit through the Oscars, and they always are doing awards for these short films, but you never get a chance to see them because they don't show alongside the typical feature films. So this is a chance to check out the short films. They're usually pretty excellent, and it's kind of fun to see a whole bunch of different short films. So, again, that's at the Panada Thursday, February 7th. That's tomorrow, and then again on Friday and Saturday. And if you have questions and want to get details on any of these events, go to our calendars that are online at krfy.org, provided by sandpointonline.com. And I did want to mention, last week we had a really good program that I heard from a couple of people that they thought was really quite informative here on the morning show when we talked about the school levy that's coming up in March, on March 12th. And we talked with Superintendent of Schools Sean Woodward and the CFO Lisa Halls. They gave a lot of really good information about the upcoming school levy. If you didn't catch that, go to our website, krfy.org, and go to the podcast page. And you just scroll down to last week's show, and you can hear what they had to say about the school levy. It's an important decision coming up in March.
And to just add to that, today's show will also be there. So if you want to hear the state of the city from the mayor, or you can't listen to the whole show live here today for our recorded interview, you can always go to krfy.org and listen to podcasts. We do record those, mostly.
Almost all of our morning shows, including the Tuesday and the Thursday morning shows, are available as podcasts on krfy.org.
And this Saturday, Chris, you and I are going to have the opportunity to sit down with our state senator, Jim Woodward, and our representative, Sage Dixon, to get a little midterm update. That will also be on our show next Wednesday on the 13th.
Yeah. So
if you have questions, is what I was trying to get to.
Yes. Yes. If you do have questions, email them. Go to our website, krfy.org. You'll see there's a link to email us. If you have a question you'd like to ask our state senator or state representative, who they're down in Boise. They're going to be up here this weekend. So this is an opportunity to pose a question. We'll ask it to them, and then we would be airing what they have to say about that next Wednesday.
Their goal right now is to keep North Idaho in the loop, informed. And last Saturday, they did a town hall at the community center. It was excellent. They will do another town hall in March, so stay tuned for that kind of information. But it's always good to be informed of what's going on rather than wonder.
Yes, it's our motto here at the morning show.
That's right. And we appreciate your listening. Should we get to our interview?
I think we better. You bet.
Okay. This is a pre-recorded interview with City Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. Enjoy this. I'll probably come back a little bit at the end of the show. If not, you'll hear some music. Thanks for listening. Have a beautiful day.
Yes, bye now. We're here with Shelby Ronstadt, our City Mayor, and Jennifer Stapleton, the City Administrator. Shelby, thanks for coming in.
Chris, pleasure to be here, and I want to say hello to all your listeners out there.
And Jennifer, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me again.
And so the topic here is really, it's the state of the city. It's kind of our version of the State of the Union. And Shelby, with that, it's over to you. Tell us about what you feel the state of the city is and what sorts of things happened in 2018. And then towards the end of the broadcast, maybe we'll swing around and talk about things that are coming up this year.
Thank you, Chris. This is always an exciting topic for me that I always am thrilled to present at the beginning of the year, mostly because we have so many great things to celebrate, especially this year in 2018. So many things happened in the city, and I think we had a lot of really big wins. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to take a little time and share some of those with the listeners today. Some of the obvious ones on the surface, if you will, everybody, of course, could not avoid the downtown construction that happened this last summer, part of our ongoing downtown revitalization effort that's through a partnership with Urban Renewal that has been largely funding the project, pretty much entirely funding the project. It's been, we did have some grant funds as well that went into the street lighting, and that was a grant from the state of Idaho. So the revitalization effort happened between 2nd Avenue and 5th Avenue on Cedar. I think it was a great project. It came in just under budget and on time, which for municipal construction work, that's always a huge win when we can accomplish that. So I think the overall outcome is great. It looks beautiful. It improved parking, created stormwater management that we really didn't have there on Cedar Street before. It's obviously more aesthetically pleasing and beautiful, and just more inviting and useful for pedestrians, multimodal traffic. And I think it just overall improves the streetscape and makes commerce and business activity, it benefits commerce downtown and just makes for an overall more appealing environment for shoppers and visitors to downtown.
If I could jump in on that one, inevitably, when you're doing a project like that, you get some complaints. And I think a lot of people at the outset of the project, at least, were saying, what are they doing? What kind of feedback are you getting now from the users, especially with the bulb outs? A lot of people are thinking, well, there's not going to be enough room for vehicles to even pass. But I think users now see a different story there.
Yeah, you know, as with anything, change, of course, is difficult. And I think it's difficult for people to accept, especially when they're, you know, their regular place of business or you know, where they like to go throughout the day is disrupted. The traffic's disrupted. There's dirt in the air because of the concrete's been pulled up, et cetera. So we definitely recognize that there's been an impact. And one thing that was a real win that came out of this, there were a lot of complaints from particularly the stakeholders downtown, the downtown business owners and users of the downtown. And we heard those complaints. We hosted a meeting late this summer, basically upon the completion of the project. And we invited all the stakeholders downtown, basically downtown business owners, and we met at the Little Panada. And we shared what we had heard from them over the course of the project. And there was a long list of things. There might have been 20 items on that list that were concerns and recommendations for how we could improve this project in the next phase. And so we took those to heart and we made significant changes in the not only the design, but really in the construction process for how we would undergo phase two. And it was a great experience because the overwhelming response from the stakeholders was, wow, thank you. You heard our concerns. You've addressed our concerns, and we feel really good about going into phase two next year, that it's going to be much less of an impact to the businesses in particular, and just much less of an impact to the overall economy downtown through the process. Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll have time at the end to come back and talk about what's up this year with the revitalization.
I'll mention a couple things that were sort of the big ones. And one is just the construction season. You know, we've had this kind of idea in our minds that the construction season has to happen during the summer. That's the only time that we can do street work in this town, which makes sense because of the weather and you know, freezing and all that. You can't pour concrete when it's freezing outside. But we really tried to think outside of the box on this one because the I would say the primary complaint that we heard from downtown businesses was that, look, this is our tourist season. This is when we make our money, is from basically June to August. And if we can't take advantage of that window of opportunity, it's killing us economically. And so we really tried to think outside the box as to how we can accommodate or look at this problem in a different way to reduce our impact during that peak business cycle. So what we did is we basically shifted the construction season, we split it into two, and we're really focusing on that after Labor Day in the fall, basically up until the snow's flying, and pushing that as late as we can into the early winter, and then closing it down, and then picking it up again as soon as we can in the spring, and trying to finish that work before the summer starts. And we think we can accomplish this. We've never tried anything like this before, but Our contractors are confident that we can accomplish this, and the business community downtown was thrilled at this response. And the other thing was doing everything that we can to mitigate the dust. There was a lot of dust that would, you know, blow into businesses when the front door would open and that kind of thing. And so we had a variety of strategies to help mitigate that dust. And again, that was met with a really warm response from the business community.
And so that means in 2019, this fall, we're going to see some construction happening, and it'll be a very interesting test case, if you will, about how this new idea, this new approach works.
Yeah.
And that will be when the construction swings around to First Avenue.
Yep.
Quickly, one other note I would have, yes, Chris, too, on downtown is with the bulb outs that were put in on Cedar as we were under construction. There was a whole lot of debate about narrowing traffic with those bulb outs and what they would mean for snow removal. We were really confident and had worked with our crews on coming up with a plan for snow removal using some different equipment through downtown. And I would just note that going through this winter under that new plan for snow removal, even with those bulb outs, it really wasn't an issue for us, and we were able to get the snow cleared. So, you know, kind of those concerns about the impacts of the bulb outs on snow removal, we didn't see those come into play. So,
and I'll just add, you know, maybe a lot of listeners don't understand the purpose of the bulb out, and that really is to protect the pedestrian as much as possible. And so it reduces the distance the pedestrian has to cross the street. It makes them more visible to oncoming traffic. And it also creates a nice space whereby we can collect that stormwater and have those green swales where we can collect and treat the stormwater and then have that beautification from the plants growing there. So mm-hmm.
So multi-purpose with those.
That's right. And it also creates a nice little public space where you have a little seating area on those stone walls where you can have public art, where you can have, you know, a bike rack, that type of thing as well.
Okay. What else is on the state
coming
of
up,
the
coming
city,
up next? So, you
list.
Know, yeah, thanks. So we created, it was early in 2018, after hearing a lot of response from the public over the last several years, about really complaints about Diamond parking and, you know, not having the same level of customer service, if you will, that citizens were accustomed to with when the city police department controlled parking enforcement. And so that was really the main driver. So we actually started this a couple years ago, but we didn't really roll out the community resource officer division until early 2018, and we have two new officers that we call Crows, and they not only handle parking enforcement throughout the downtown core, but they also do a lot to relieve the existing police staff from their time-consuming activities throughout the day, and things like just overall response to sort of general code enforcement. It could be, you know, a branch falling on the sidewalk or some kind of sidewalk or right-of-way encroachment. It could be, enforcing business licenses that have either gone out of, haven't been people operating in town without a license, those kinds of things. Reporting to a dog call, or if there's a dog on the loose or an animal control problem. Those are the kinds of things that the Crows can respond to. And it really, takes that workload off of our existing patrol officers, which is a huge help to the police department. And it's a much more cost-effective way to handle those kinds of problems. And then just the overall, community relations aspect. They really act as our on-the-street, on-the-ground ambassadors for the city. So I think that's been a huge benefit, and the response that we've heard overall is that certainly parking enforcement has been a much more sort of community friendly exercise now, and it's been a lot more effective for us, and it's been cost effective too, and it helps us manage some of those other code enforcement issues and relieve that stress off the police department.
So when you say cost effective, how does that compare to having a contract with Diamond? Are we is costing us a little more, a little bit less?
It costs us a little more, but I think the overall benefit is well worth it. Mm-hmm. And that was the original reason that we went with Diamond in the first place. I was new on council at that time, and I think it was 2012, and we had budget shortfalls, and we were looking to cut budget wherever and however we could. And that year, we actually laid off, I think it was 7 or 8 people that year, which hadn't, I don't know when that had happened last, the city of Sandpoint. And so by eliminating what was then the municipal enforcement division, we saved about $85,000 by going with Diamond. And I think it ended up about that much more, if I recall. Jennifer would know better than I would probably. But so there was a little bit of a cost to it. But again, I think the improvement in service and what it did in terms of freeing up the rest of the department, it was clearly the right move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those officers are taking on some of the duties that the police were having to respond to. And so in a sense, you've expanded your police force.
Essentially, police and its other departments across the city as well, because they really function as our code enforcement officers for all of our complaints. So again, that we've been really working towards this notion of one-stop service. So whether it is, as the mayor mentioned, whether it's a branch blocking a sidewalk, sidewalks not cleared, animal control, parking issues, some of these things would get farmed out between planning and zoning, our building official, sometimes downstairs in the administrative offices, sometimes in the police department. So this really centralizes all of those enforcement functions, benefits all of our departments then with moving it into one central location. And it also means we're consistent then in our response. So,
okay. Yeah. Next on your list, Mayor Shelby.
Yeah. And this is something I think I can speak for Jennifer too. This is one of the things that I think we're most excited about. And that is Engage Sandpoint, which is the first municipal mobile app in the Inland Northwest and in the state of Idaho. Although I think since we launched in, was it June, I think?
September. Officially.
So there's been there's been a couple that have popped up since then. But we were the first. And what Engage Sandpoint is it's a mobile app you can download onto your iPhone or your Android. And you can find it on the App Store under Engage Sandpoint. I think it's under Engage Sandpoint, even on the Apple platform now. And what it does is it really puts the power of civic engagement right in your fingertips. You can do anything from, you know, report a pothole or a crack in the sidewalk or, you know, a disturbance, a public disturbance of something, anything that you feel that you need to report to the city, you can report it right there on the spot. It's GPSed and tagged, and then you'll get an immediate response from the city. And when I say immediate, usually we respond within 24 hours, which is, you know, not only, which is a lot more efficient than the system that we had before, which had to be routed through phones and, you know, and it just didn't have the same level of quick response. This way it gets routed right to the department and to the person that can best address the issue. And then the citizen can check back and they can get a response directly from the city to let them know that the request was received and that it's being addressed. And then when the problem is resolved, they'll get a notice as well. And it gives the public the opportunity to see what other people are seeing as issues within their city. And so people can respond and say, oh, I noticed that issue as well. I also want to comment on that. And so when we get multiple comments like that, those items will rise up in priority and they'll be prioritized for you know, resolution in that way. But it also enables, Engage Sandpoint also enables people to, you know, you can register a business, you can register your bicycle, you can check and see what's happening at the city council meeting or what the agenda is coming up. You have all kinds of ways to engage with the city and participate, be involved, be informed. And then this kind of leads into another thing that we also rolled out at the beginning of 2018, and it's a new platform called Open Town Hall. And this, both Engage Sandpoint and Open Town Hall and another platform, OpenGov, which I'll talk about as well, they're all part of a of an effort by the city to really make civic engagement more more accessible. And we're trying to make it easier for people to be informed and to get involved and participate in local government. And what Open Town Hall does is it creates an online, it's an online platform, and you can find it through Engage Sandpoint. And anytime that we're trying to assess public opinion on any kind of issue, we can submit a survey through Open Town Hall, and people can log on and they can become informed about the issue and provide a thoughtful response. And it really gives us a powerful tool to be able to understand what, you know, how the public feels about certain issues. The first time we rolled it out was in, I want to say it was February of 2018, and we were looking at the University of Idaho Boyer property, and we were considering options for development, potential development on that property, and we wanted to get a good understanding of what the public's interest was in that property, what they wanted to see there in the long term. And just in that initial survey, you know, this thing had just been rolled out. We hardly had a chance to market it and advertise it. And we had over 700 responses in a town of 8,500 people. So incredible response. And I think going forward into the future, we're going to continue to use this tool a lot. And I think the participation is going to continue to increase. And it's just going to mean that we have, it's going to help us as electeds, your mayor, your city council, and certainly city staff, be much more informed about where our public is at and where their priorities are at and what's important to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually checking out the app right now as you speak on my iPhone, and I can see Open Town Hall, and you have a question out right now. What are your thoughts about Sandpoint's existing sidewalk and pathway infrastructure and walkability? So that's a survey that's happening right now. It looks like the deadline is in the next day, so by the time this airs, this survey may be off. But you have 45 responses on that. And the interesting thing here is that the people that are checking it out can actually see a compilation of what other people are saying. They can't see the individuals that are saying it, but they can see the aggregate, and it gives an idea of what the other citizens are thinking. So that's
right.
That's part of the transparency, I'd say.
The one thing I would add to that, though, is you can either register in our survey platform, or you can stay anonymous and not register. And if you don't register an account in there, your results still count, but they aren't shown publicly. So while you're seeing 45 responses today, on the back end administratively, we're seeing probably more like 100. I haven't looked today. But we're seeing between about a third and 40% of people register, and that's about what we saw with the U of I survey as well. Your information's confidential. It's in aggregate there. So again, we recommend registering for it so that you're part of that whole public engagement. And as the mayor is going to be talking about activities for this year, we have a lot of master planning going on, and I know people are going to be excited and want to participate. So they're going to continue to see new surveys come out. This app changes on a regular basis. So if people haven't been on it lately, get back on, because we're changing buttons all of the time, adding functions based on what we're working on at the moment.
Yeah. And I'll say, too, that if you still got a flip phone or you're a dial-up kind of person, you can also log on online and access Engage Sandpoint and Open Town Hall through our website.
On our website, on our Facebook page, and we have two public kiosks in City Hall. So we have people that come in and they don't have great internet connection where they are. We haven't gotten with the build out of our systems yet to them for fiber, but they come into City Hall and use it at our two kiosks there too. So that's open to people too.
That's right, and that's another example of what we're trying to create as a one-stop shop customer service orientation throughout City Hall. As Jennifer said, those kiosks are an important part of that. You can come into City Hall right now and see that within this last year, we've combined finance and administration. There used to be a wall separating those two offices, and now there's one window for both administration and finance. And our goal within this next year is to also bring I want to say public works, but rather
infrastructure and development services.
That's right, as well as police services and planning, all within that one customer service. Oh, and I'm sorry, parks, parks and recreation, all within one customer service window. So that's what we're shooting for, is a one-stop shop. And then this, you know, also blends really well with the Engage standpoint and the Open to Hall platform, OpenGov. All of this is part of this collective effort to create a more responsive government and improved civic engagement and customer service.
Okay. We're going to take a second here for a station identification. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, The Morning Show. And we're speaking this morning with Shelby Ronstad, Mayor, and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. And this is a state of the city, basically, where our mayor has given us an idea of what is going on with the city. And with that, Mayor, what is next on your list?
So this year, in 2018, or this last year, we completed a strategic planning effort that was the city's first. And it really started back in 2016, my first year in office, and Jennifer's first year here. And we've been working on it for a couple years. And I think it was a huge accomplishment to complete this strategic plan, which really enabled us to focus our priorities, bring them into alignment, and make sure that that we are, you know, that we're being as responsible as possible with our public taxpayer dollars, and that we are that our efforts are aligned with our priorities. So in light of that, and I'll talk more about that, because really that feeds into a lot of what's happening in 2019. That really set the stage, that strategic plan really set the stage for a robust master planning process that I'll talk about here coming up. But another thing that I want to mention is that I was really happy about this year. Late 2017, and City Council voted to dissolve the Business Improvement District. And this was after a lot of outreach with stakeholders and with the public, trying to assess where, if there was enough continued interest in the bid to have it continue to operate. At that time, it seemed like there wasn't the political will to continue, and so the council dissolved the bid. But in the wake of that, there were many services from the bid, and really a couple crucial ones that we've all come to depend on and really value. And so we were concerned about A, streetlights. What about our holiday streetlights in the winter? And two, flower baskets in the summer. Beautification and, visibility for safety and just commerce in the winter is critical. So we tried to do everything that we could to create some budget authority this year to be able to continue to offer those services. And so I was really pleased with with the streetlights that we were able to fund this year. We didn't make it all the way through the core this year because there just wasn't the funding to do it, but there will be more funding that we've committed in this next fiscal year, and we'll be able to continue that holiday lighting down Fifth Avenue. And so it'll actually be more robust, the lighting, than what we have had previously. And then as well, the flower baskets. We funded the flower basket program this last year, and it'll happen again this next year. There were some leftover bid funds in the account, and so we've used those funds to continue to fund that flower basket program.
And but it's been a great example, I think, of a partnership, and really shows really both the engagement of our businesses in our downtown and the city as we're reaching out to those businesses. With the flower basket program, it was businesses reaching out for donations rather than for the cost of the flower baskets themselves, rather than the bid tax paying for those. So I know they're going to be reaching out again this year. We already have ordered baskets last fall, but businesses are going to be reaching out for their fundraising campaign for that. And then on the city side, what we're supporting with that is hanging of the baskets, purchase of the fertilizer, watering the baskets and maintaining those throughout the season. Mm-hmm. So, and on Cedar, those will be on automatic watering with the new construction we did running up the light poles.
Oh, so. Nice. Yeah, that's looking ahead right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that I'm very excited about, a pet project of mine since way back in about 2013, I think, phase one of the Watershed Crest Trail was completed this past summer. So that, for those of your listeners who don't know, the Watershed Crest Trail is a crest line multi-use trail for non-motorized users, hikers, bikers, skiers, etc., that circumnavigates the Little Sand Creek watershed. And it really starts behind the top of the triple at Schweitzer. And you can access it through what they call the Basin Trail and the existing Schweitzer trail network system. That's, I should say, Schweitzer and Selkirk Recreation District that have built and managed that trail system that you see all the way from the second switchback on the Schweitzer Road up through the village and up to the top of Schweitzer on the southwest side. And that new phase one trail continues that network on this crest line out towards out Yolita Ridge. And right now it basically ends at the end of Yolita Ridge. That's as far as they've built. So that was about, I want to say it's about 2 miles of trail or so that they built out on top of the existing network. So that's great, but
now to clarify, who's doing the building here?
Oh yes, thank you. So this is a partnership with Ponderay Peddlers, who have demonstrated a tremendous amount of leadership to really kind of take the bull by the horns on this one, and have designed and built this trail, and will continue to do maintenance. We have an agreement with the peddlers, and they've pulled in some grant funds and a lot of volunteer support over the last couple years to make this thing a reality. And this will continue. We're not sure how long this will take at this point, and this is another thing I'll mention here coming up. This will be something that will be addressed in our planning processes that are coming up in 2019, what the future of that Crest Trail looks like, and if in fact there could be other recreational opportunities available in the Little Sand Creek watershed up there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just even having that trail is really a sea change for the city. For many, up till the time that trail got started, the city watershed was really off limits. You weren't supposed to go in there at all. And so this is making use of all that property that the city owns for a secondary use. That's very low impact.
That's right. Yep. The city of Sandpoint owns about 4,000 acres up there in the Little Sand Creek watershed. And that process of ownership started back in 1918, if you can believe it. The city council back then had the foresight to start investing in purchasing property up there, because up until 2012, that was the city's only source of municipal water. Since 2012, we opened the lake plant, and now we have basically an unlimited source of water.
But I will say the water from Little Sand Creek is nicer.
It is. It absolutely is. Yep. And this is, you know, this is not, this is common. I think if you look around the country, you see increasingly this idea that it's okay to marry recreation and water conservation and water protection. Those are not diametrically opposed. They can coexist together, and there have been many communities who've done that successfully. And you know, we have this incredible resource up there, and we've protected it, and we've treated it we've treated it gracefully, given it the what's the word I'm looking for, given it the reverence that it deserves. But it's also a huge economic opportunity up there for us to have a very limited, focused kind of low impact recreation, and still not impact that water quality and not introduce any significant risk there. But we're creating this crestline trail up there that really puts Sandpoint on the map. You know, this day and age, there's a real boon in outdoor recreation, particularly as it relates to multimodal trails and connectivity through mountain biking, hiking, off-piste skiing, and this kind of thing. And so there's huge opportunities there. There's no other asset or amenity like the Crest Trail anywhere in the bioregion. This is something that you'd have to go definitely outside of the North Idaho Panhandle to get this kind of experience. When you're up there on that crest line, we're talking mile after mile of 365-degree views, seeing the vistas and mountain peaks all around. You can see both Lake Ponderay as well as Priest Lake. It's just incredible up there. And then the fact that it's connected to the whole Schweitzer network, it just creates this incredible recreational amenity and draw that's going to be a huge boon for the region.
Mm-hmm. And I'll throw this in. We don't have time for all these subjects as much as we might like, but the mountain biking scene and that trail system is really coming along. It is becoming a destination recreational activity for a lot of people. So if our listeners haven't been up on that trail, it's worth checking out. Okay, next on the list.
Next on the list. So we made a decision to, there was a, we came to a head with the future of the wastewater treatment plant. We're at that point where we need to do something. Our current plant needs to be upgraded, and we're growing, right? And so not only do we need to spend significant capital to upgrade and maintain our existing facility, but we have to be able to accommodate future growth. And so the question was, do we continue at our existing site at the Lakeview plant there, where wastewater has been treated for the entire history of Sandpoint, or do we look at moving to an alternate site, which we have, the city owns a piece of property off of Baldy, 37 acres there on the west side of town that was purchased back in 2009 under the thinking that perhaps that would be a better future location. After a lot of analysis, we had citizen advisory stakeholder meetings. We had continued consultation with our contractors. We decided that the most cost-effective solution would be to stay at our existing plant. And basically, bottom line is it would end up saving the taxpayers somewhere in the neighborhood of about $30, $35 million. So that was really our primary decision driver was how can we make this, this is already going to be a tough pill to swallow for our ratepayers. And so we need to do everything we can to try and minimize that cost. And so that really drove the decision. And just looking forward, we will continue with design. We will look for a design build contract, and we'll begin that process this next year. And we're expecting by 2020 we should have a design. But moving on, another thing that I'm really excited about is we created a capital reserve fund and an economic stabilization fund. It was actually created in 2017, but in 2018, we again contributed to both of these funds. And what that does is the capital reserve fund gives us a way to be able to fund these big capital projects that we have without impacting the rest of our budget. And the economic stabilization fund gives us that economic resiliency in economic downtime. So this is just another example of fiscal responsibility. And then another thing that I'll mention is we did update our snow removal policy in 2018. And now for the first time, we're providing 24 hours of snow removal coverage. And also for the first time, pre-treatment, which we didn't do before. So
what is pre-treatment?
Pre-treatment is now, basically our policy now, rather than having sort of a reactive policy where we would wait until we have at least 2 inches of snow and then mobilize. Now we look at the forecast, and when we're projected to have at least 2 inches or more, we will either mobilize to get out and make sure we have the snow crews out, or we will pre-treat, if we're expecting an ice event, we'll go out there and we'll put brine on the streets, and that will break down the ice. I know we're kind of getting low on time. I'd like to get into 2019 a little bit to give people an idea of what to look forward to that's exciting in 2019, if that's all right, Chris.
You bet. Let's go for it.
Okay. So as I've kind of alluded to, there's, on the tails of our strategic plan that we've recently completed, it really set the table for us being able to look at all of our, department by department, look at all of our plans and revise those plans with our new set of priorities and strategic goals to make sure that our funding and budgeting is basically aligned with our priorities. So what that requires is that we go through this master planning process. And first one that's going to be coming up on the docket here is the Parks Master Plan. So we actually put out an RFP, just releasing it now. So we're going to be hiring a contractor that's going to help guide us through this process and make sure that we have a lot of public engagement. And we'll be taking an overall assessment of what our assets are throughout our entire park system, and then setting priorities and identifying opportunities. And then once we kind of do that sort of overall 30,000 foot, snapshot, we're going to dive in and specifically look at City Beach and develop a master plan specific to City Beach. And that would also include a Sand Creek lot just on the east side of Bridge Street there. And really just look at it, any opportunities that we can take advantage of there that we haven't to this date.
Will the master plan deal with the turf question at Memorial Field?
It will. Absolutely, it will. It'll take a look at all of our ball fields and make sure that we're getting the most out of our playing fields as we possibly can. And so we're going to look at what opportunities are to get more play time and what kind of investments we can make to make sure that we get as much of an extended season out of all of our fields as we possibly can. And so with this too, this will be, we're going to be taking this master planning process will take into account a business perspective. We're going to make sure that whatever plan we come up with, that it's fiscally sustainable, and that's going to be built into that ultimate plan that we come up with. And then also another subset of that Parks Master Plan will be the Watershed Master Plan. And again, this will specifically address the Watershed Crest Trail and what the future route looks like. And it's also going to it's basically going to give the public the opportunity to assess what is the appropriate level of recreation that's right for our watershed. What are we willing to live with, and what kinds of restrictions do we want to put on that? There could be an opportunity to have a more robust network of non-motorized trails through the watershed that could open it up more to Nordic skiing and skate skiing and that kind of thing, and multiple loop routes that would just make it more accessible and more of a recreation destination. So those are the kinds of questions that will come up, and there will be opportunities for the public to engage these questions and really participate in this discussion fully, either through Engage Sandpoint, open town hall. We'll have public meetings at real locations where they can show up and participate and get involved. And another plan coming up is a transportation plan, and we're basically taking an overall look at our streets throughout the city and making sure that we're investing our very limited street dollars as best we can to ensure that we have the best transportation system locally that we can come up with. That one's not quite as sexy, so I'm going to move on. And then a sidewalk and pathway plan. And as you mentioned, Chris, that's up on open town hall right now. And we will continue having discussions and forums with the public, inviting the public to participate, and coming up with a strategic plan for how we can, again, better invest our dollars to make the best pedestrian and multimodal pathway system throughout the city that we can. Unfortunately, we just don't have enough money to be able to, you know, rebuild every city sidewalk, right? So we really need
or
to be,
just build them for the first time.
Or build it, that's right.
Because we have a lot of streets with no sidewalks.
That's absolutely right. So we really need to be strategic with our dollars and get the biggest bang for our buck. And so that's really what this sidewalk and pathway plan is about. And this will be continuing. I'm not sure how much longer this
will
be going.
We'll probably be continuing this into spring of next year. But one aspect of it that we're looking at right now that people may be very interested in and getting engaged in, because there's been a fair amount of controversy about this, is our current sidewalk code and the requirements, the triggers, particularly for building improvements, new building, and when that triggers costs for sidewalks and installing sidewalks. So there will be a workshop on this in the next month. People will want to be looking at our council agenda and participating in that discussion.
Yep, keep an eye open for that.
Yeah. And a lot of plans. You know, we've also got a water service master plan coming up, a stormwater master plan coming up, a wastewater master plan coming up. And part of that is also going to be an INI or inflow and infiltration plan. So all of this, again, is an effort to come up with a really strategic outlook about, okay, what are our capital outlays looking forward? And it's really going to help the city council to understand how we can best prioritize our budgeting in the future to make sure that we're getting the most for our dollar, because we're going to have a lot of competing interests. And we need to make sure that we're spending our dollars very wisely and that we've really thought through, our capital expenditures looking forward in every division.
And citizens for each element will have an opportunity to put in their feedback on some
absolutely.
Of this planning.
Absolutely. Every one of these
particularly
plans,
that parks plan, I imagine there's going to be a lot of interest in that.
All of
absolutely.
These things. And if people are interested too, again, plugging our Engage Sandpoint app, and we'll be getting these out on our webpage, and we also, they're all in our council packet. So as we're going into a planning process, we publish what we call a story on it, of what we're doing and why, what the timeline is, what the plan is with it. And so the public can look at each of those individually. So on our Engage Sandpoint platform right now, we've got the snow plan, we've got wastewater plan is on there, Parks and Rec we had rolled out, and next week's council meeting, so the day that this show airs, we'll be rolling out the planning process and doing a presentation on our water master plan. Mm-hmm. So that will be available that day.
Yeah, that day, which means if you're listening to this on Wednesday, you could come to the city council meeting at 5:30, I believe?
Yes.
Yep, at City Hall. We're just about out of time. You want to wrap things up with the last minute or so here, Shelby and Jennifer?
Sure. Yeah, I'll just mention one more thing that's pretty cool, more for us internally probably than the public out there. But we are rolling out a new accounting software that is going to be awesome for us internally. It's going to provide incredible efficiencies that we've been really needing, which basically enables us to be a lot more streamlined in terms of staffing. And it's literally going to create efficiencies, not just in finance, but across every department. So I know internally we're really excited about that, and it's going to, it's going to be good news on the bottom line as far as, administratively being responsible with our taxpayer dollars. So, but I just want to say to all the listeners out there, and to you, Chris, thank you for this opportunity. It's always great to come on the radio here and share what's going on with the city. And I hope that everybody out there is excited about all the good news that's going on with the city of Sandpoint, as I am. And I hope to see you all participating in all these planning efforts we've been talking about coming up in the near future. We really appreciate and need your support to make city government as good as we possibly can. Yeah, so thank you.
And that's the original power of the people right there.
So that's
getting
right.
involved and getting engaged in your city.
I've got my fist in the air.
Well, thank you again, Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. And it was a big year in 2018 and a lot of stuff to look forward in 2019. So,
yep.
Thank you now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you just were listening to The State of the City with Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. That was recorded earlier. Chris had a chance to sit down with both of them. And we are podcasting this on our website at krfy.org. And this is 88.5 KRFY. This is the end of the morning show. We have just a few minutes left. Tomorrow on the morning show, you will hear Jim Healy and Jack Peterson. They'll be talking with Kate McAllister and Betty Rivak about the upcoming performance of Drinking Habits that will be performed at the Panada Theater. Airtime is 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's Thursday, February 7th. I want to remind folks that there is a survey out. It's called the Sandpoint Area Media Survey. It's hosted by the Sandpoint Reader. And you can give a little love to KRFY and go to krfy.org. There's a direct link to the survey on our website. And you can think about saying that KRFY is your favorite radio or whatever one you choose. KRFY, by the way, in the long list of radio stations is down at the bottom of the list. And next week, Chris and I will have the opportunity actually to have a recorded interview with our state senator, Jim Woodward, and our representative, Sage Dixon. That interview will take place this Saturday, but we will broadcast it next Wednesday. That's the 13th of February. So tune in for that. They really are making an effort to give the citizens of North Idaho, the listeners here at KRFY, an opportunity to hear what's going on in Boise and some of their views on some of those issues. So if you have a question that you would like us to ask them, get it to us by Friday and we could include it. And that you can go to our website again at krfy.org to there's a link to our email right there. Send us your questions for our Representative Sage Dixon and Senator Jim Woodward. And with that, we're going to go out with a song. I'm dedicating this or sending it out to Jean. The bass line in this song is really great. I just really think it's wonderful. It's a Bob Dylan song, As I Went Out Walking, covered by Myra Bellott. Have a great day. Thank you for listening.